The stars are aligning at Torrey Pines. Day three of the Farmers Insurance Open gets underway today as world number one John Rahm and Justin Thomas are leading the way in San Diego. And Lydia Ko gave the crowds at the Gainbridge LPGA something to cheer about yesterday as the 16-time tour winner fired a 9-under 63 at Boca Raton. We look ahead to round two. And it's been an epic week, but today marks the final day of the PGA Show in Orlando, Florida. And our friends Bailey Shambly and Matt Adams will be joining us throughout the show. This is Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And with that, we say a very good morning, happy Friday, and welcome you into our Golf Channel studios. Anna Whiteley, delighted, as always, to be alongside the great Eamon Lynch. I haven't seen you in so long. It is wonderful to see you. Final day of the PGA Show. You were down there schmoozing and sort of doing your thing on Wednesday, as you do. We've all seen you in action. What are we missing for those of us who are up here in Connecticut?
Well, it was an interesting week this week, Anna, because clearly the show is coming out of this kind of post-COVID era, and there's a realignment has to happen with the show, period. Because it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily coincide with when product launches happen anymore. But this, the golf industry needs a networking situation, and it has it at the PGA Show. It has it to an extent at Augusta National, to a lesser extent at, say, the Players in the Open Championship. But this is the most accessible networking opportunity for the entire golf industry as a whole. So it's essential, in my mind, that the show survives and thrives going forward. And, you know, there's going to be, it will not look in the future what it has looked like in the past. And I think COVID's going to help it bridge that gap.
Well, in the meantime, we've got quite the leaderboard at the Farmers Insurance Open with some major star power at the top. You can see John Rahm and Justin Thomas are part of that three-way tie for first at the moment, alongside Adam Scheck, who just had a killer day yesterday. 8 consecutive birdies. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But Jason Day as well, he went low yesterday. But let's just focus on our world number one, John Rahm, for just a moment and check out his highlights from yesterday. Coming off that 66 on the south course, here he is on the north course, Eamon, starting on the par 5 10th.
And after laying up from the trees, he had this for his third. Hit a great wedge shot inside of 10 feet, made the putt and went to 7 under par.
This is his stomping ground. This is what he loves. Here he is in the par 4 16th, his second from just off the rough.
This is textbook using the backstop.
Yes, it is. Working it nicely as a world number one would. Let's face it, he would make the birdie putt to take a one-shot lead at 10 under par at that point. So onto the par 4 second, his tee shot.
He doesn't look quite as happy with this one. Into the thick rough, and all those stories we've heard about how John Rahm is newly calmed down, not so much.
Keep it bottled up, John Rahm, keep it together. Yeah, he's not happy with that, but his standards are just so high. He gets so frustrated for a little moment like that. Okay, onto the par 5 5th. His tee shot. Here he is in the sun.
Oh, the one-arm finish with a drop club is seldom a good sign.
Yeah, disappointing day for John Rahm yesterday off the tee. He only hit 4 of 14 fairways in the second round. Not what he was expecting, not what we were expecting. But here he is now on the par 4 6th, his second.
This is where John Rahm makes hay. Hits it to 6 feet, made the birdie, got to 11 under par, just one back.
Yeah, really good shot there on the par 4 7th. So he drove it to the back of the green, had this putt for birdie, would make it, would move to 12 under, just one shot back of the lead at that point. So how about the par 3 8th now, putting for birdie.
This is to get to 13 under and a share of the lead.
Absolutely drains it. That man is so good with the flat stick in hand. So he would move to 13 under for the co-lead. So John Rahm, part of that three-way tie for the lead at 13 under. And that third round tee time is at 2:40 p.m. Eastern today. But we know just how much John Rahm adores Torrey Pines. You can see these are his results since that 2017 Farmers Insurance Open, his breakthrough win on the PGA Tour, a runner-up finish in 2020, that win last year for his first major at the US Open in 2021. So let's hear from John Rahm as he reflected on his second round.
I mean, it wasn't bad yesterday. It certainly wasn't bad today. I managed really well today, and it feels good because if you tell me before the round I'm going to hit four fairways and shoot seven under, I'll tell you that, you know, something out there must have been really good, and which today it was. For how little fairways I hit, I was able to hit a lot of those greens from the rough, which is not the easiest thing to do.
So John Rahm went out there yesterday on the North Course and shot a 65. He did shoot a 66 in round one, so was slightly better yesterday. But the interesting thing is looking at his fairways hit. He hit just 4 of 14 fairways yesterday, 10 of 14 in that opening round. And we saw the frustrations, Eamon. We know John Rahm is a fiery player, but he says, you know, he's matured. He's kind of moved on from the Rahm that we've seen of old, sort of losing it and, you know, steam coming out the ears, because that's the Rahm that we were used to. Do you believe that he is a bit of a mature John Rahm now?
I think he's a slightly more mature John Rahm. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's lost the fire or the edge that was there at all. And I think that's a good thing for John Rahm. I mean, Seve played with a chip on his shoulder for his entire career. John Rahm is a fiery character. And what we saw off the second tee yesterday to me was actually a positive. Here's a guy who had the strongest club in his bag, which is a driver, wasn't quite working for him. Hauls one left into the rough and he just starts tomahawking his club into the ground after that. But it's, you know, it was interesting. He did hit four fairways yesterday. It's not the easiest. And here we see him on the second hole where he just kind of loses the temper a little bit. And this isn't the easiest course to hit driver on, mainly because of mowing lines rather than architecture. It's a tough golf course, but it should be worrying for the people he's playing against that he hit 10 of 14 fairways on the south course, because that's where they're playing for the next 2 days. And there is a four-stroke difference typically between the north and south courses. Tomahawk that club, John. Go for it. There's typically a four-stroke difference with the north course is easier than the south. John Rahm was actually one stroke higher yesterday playing the north course than he was the south course. But that's also should be worrying for the guys he's up against, because it shows how well he played the course that they're actually going to play on the next 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, John Rahm may not have had his driver dialed in yesterday, but he is the world's number one player. And let's face it, he's playing like the world's number one player. If you see John Rahm on the leaderboard, it's almost very likely that he's going to be finishing in the top five, if not winning the whole tournament. And the thing I really like about John Rahm is that he's sort of developing into this role that what he says carries weight. We saw it earlier this, well, last week, really talking about the course setup over the last kind of 3 or 4 weeks on the PGA Tour, that they've just been too easy. And he's becoming the kind of player that really transcends the world of golf across Europe, across America. He was an absolute star for the Ryder Cup. He carried that European team. Mm-hmm. And John Rahm is becoming a serious contender for someone that people really listen to. I think Rory is in that as well. Morikawa is kind of developing into that role. I can see him being a very influential world number one at some point. But for John Rahm, what he says matters, how he performs matters, and he's sort of encapsulating and embodying everything it takes to be a world number one.
Yeah, and he's realised there's a certain obligation that comes with being world number one, which is the expectation that you ought to speak out and can speak out with some authority on issues in the game, whether it's something grand, like the idea of rival tours, or if it's something relatively minor like course setup at the Amex last week. And the great thing about John Rahm is you looked at, we saw that graphic of what his record is like here at Torrey Pines. This used to be Tiger Woods' house. Mm. I mean, Tiger's record here was just unimpeachable, but there's a new tenant in Tiger's house now. This is John Rahm's place. He's won the US Open here, he's won the Farmers, and he's put himself in a great position, because if you're one of the rest of these guys on the leaderboard, a guy you do not want to look up and see at the top these days is John Rahm. He hasn't actually won since Torrey Pines, but he's putting himself there week in and week out.
Yeah, had his breakthrough win, proposed to his lovely wife, Kelly, at Torrey Pines, then went on to win the US Open at Torrey Pines. If this man loves to be anywhere on the PGA Tour schedule, it is Torrey Pines. OK, well, someone else who is having a pretty good week out there, that is Justin Thomas, also tied for the lead at the moment alongside John Rahm. So let's check out some of his highlights from yesterday on the North Course on the short par 4, the 11th. Pretty good.
That was the second shot from the right rough. Rose 4 feet by, but he made the birdie and got to 6 under par.
Yeah, good stuff. JT here on the par 4 16th. Another look at birdie with perfect speed. Makes it, gets to 8 under, so one shot back of the lead at this point. So moving on to the par 4 second. His third, just chipping from the right fringe.
Up the slope, and he gets the result we'd all like to see. 10 under par, one
good
shot back.
Stuff, little fist pump. Little acknowledgement to Bones saying, good job there, buddy. Right, onto the par 5 fifth, his third shot from the right.
He doesn't look too happy with this.
No, he doesn't.
But again, the backstop kicks in.
Yeah, these players know what they're doing. So he would make birdie once again there to tie the lead at 11 under. So the par 4 sixth, his second from 109 yards. Pretty comfortable.
And this is one where he's going to have to look sideways to see the flag.
JT, very dark. It's on a Thursday. Right, he would make the birdie there to tie the lead at 12 under. We haven't really seen him that much at this event, so it's cool to see him out here. It's cool to see him at the top of the leaderboard onto the par 4 seventh here. His tee shot, 322 yards to the hole.
And this was absolutely beautiful. Right down the middle of the green.
Yeah, good stuff. So that second round, tying the lead at 13 under. Let's hear from JT yesterday.
Yeah, obviously two completely different golf courses and different nines. I mean, that back nine, it's the south course is very challenging, and I just missed a couple fairways that I needed to hit, and you know, those greens just got really, really bumpy at the end of the day. That's just what Poana does, and you have to be a little bit cautious and defensive on some of the ones that you usually would try to make. But yeah, I was very pleased. I mean, obviously I know I would have loved it to be a 6 or 7 under, but I'll never be upset with a 4 under in Torrey South.
So JT and Rahm go off with Adam Schenk at 2:40 p.m. Eastern. Here's a look at their odds powered by PointsBet Sportsbook. You can see John Rahm has just got the edge at the moment at plus 120 over JT. Cameron Tringali. Interesting fact, Eamon, about Cameron Tringali. Of all the players on the PGA Tour who have never won, he's earned the most money. Did you know that?
I did, actually. $15 million. And the bookies don't seem to think he's going to win this weekend either. There's a lot of gap between him and the two guys at the top.
It is. So it looks like it's a head-to-head between John Rahm and JT, but we will find out. Well, let's turn our attention to the Korn Ferry Tour for just a moment, shall we, as we witnessed an amazing start to the season last week as 19-year-old Akshay Bhatia delivered one of the shots of the year to pick up the win at the Bahamas Great Exuma Classic in his first start as a conditional member of the tour. So you can see here the youngest winners on the Korn Ferry Tour. Jason Day was just 19 years, 7 months and 26 days. Akshay Bhatia right there with them, 19 years old, 11 months and 19 days. So an incredible, incredible achievement for this man. Akshay, I'm delighted to welcome you into golf today. It is so wonderful to see you. Congratulations. What a week it was for you. Tell us, was there any part of you that thought that you were going to go out there for the season opening event and claim your first professional victory?
Oh man, hard to say. I hurt myself 3 weeks before teeing it up. I dislocated my left shoulder, so I didn't even know if I was going to be able to play, but everything worked out, and had my girlfriend on the bag that week, which was even cooler because that's a memory we're going to have for a long, long time. So it was amazing just to be able to get that win and, you know, set my schedule now.
Akshay, you were 17 years old when you turned pro. You were 17 when you made your debut on the PGA Tour. You have to be ahead of where you thought you would be this early in your career, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had plenty of opportunities to get my tour card. Last season, I started with the top 10 and put myself in contention in, I think, 2 or 3 other tour events, Mayakoba, Pebble Beach, and had some strong starts in other tour events, but just wasn't able to capitalize on it, and everything happens for a reason, in my opinion. So I'm just happy to have status somewhere and be able to play a full schedule versus a limited schedule on tour with 7 starts and Monday qualifiers. And even on this tour, it's nice to have a full schedule now.
Akshay, we all know you decided to turn pro at the age of 17. Now, a lot of people at the time thought that that was too young and perhaps you should be going to college, but you didn't, and you believed in yourself, and look, hey, it's paid off. Do you feel like you've proved something to yourself and also to the doubters who thought that you shouldn't have turned pro so young?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to be hard. I didn't think it would be as hard as it was when I turned pro, but I knew it wasn't going to be easy. Trying to win on the PGA Tour, playing against the best players in the world. But I don't regret anything that I've done or what my family's done and sacrificed for me to be successful. And the people I've been able to meet on tour and on this tour and everyone involved around golf has been something that I don't think I would have ever experienced if I didn't turn pro early. So I'm glad that, you know, people see my path and enjoy watching it and support me. But all that matters is the self-belief. And, you know, I've always had it, but to win, especially at this level, at any level, is hard. And when I'm winning on the Korn Ferry is, you know, it's hard, and it means a lot to a lot of players. I mean, Brandon Harkins won last week. He's played 180 something events, PGA Tour sanctioned events, and you see how much that means to him. So, winning my first start is pretty cool.
Well, Brendan Harkins is actually going to join us later, so we've got all the winners on the Korn Ferry Tour this year. You talked about the importance, actually, of having status on the Korn Ferry Tour. Last year, you played 11 events on the PGA Tour with some highs, some lows. What does this change in terms of your outlook for the year, winning so early? Do you now focus on the Korn Ferry Tour, securing your card, maybe even going for a battlefield promotion? Or if the opportunities arise to play on the big show, are you still going to take those? How does it divide your time?
Yeah, I'm going to really focus out here just because this is my first time having a full schedule, so I want to take advantage of it. I'm also meeting a lot of new players here. I'm new to this tour, so meeting a lot of these guys, it's fun because, you know, you feel like you're part of the group, and I think winning makes it a little easier to meet people and you play practice runs with and whatnot. But I don't plan on changing the scenery. I just plan on trying to finish number one on the top 25 so I can get the US Open start, the full schedule on the PGA Tour, the players. And whether it takes me 8 months or 9 months to achieve that, or I win three times, at least I have that one win already. So two more wins is, you know, it's definitely achievable in the next 26, 7 starts.
Yeah, no one can take that first one away from you, Akshay. And you have had some amazing experiences over the last couple of years. I'm sure one of those for you was playing a practice round with Phil Mickelson. I mean, he said he was inspired by you, by your youth, your energy, your sort of fresh approach to the game. What did you learn from Lefty?
Oh, man. I mean, being able to be a part of it. You know, his life and him to be in mine is truly amazing. I've looked up to him forever. Obviously, him and Tiger and Fred Couples, all those guys, they were some of the greatest players growing up for me. And it's just really cool. I've been able to build a friendship with him, play practice rounds with him anytime we're in the same event. And he's always super gracious with his time. So just to be able to be a part of, you know, a legend is cool. And I think he sees a lot of himself in me, and also being Lefty, it kind of helps because he sees golf courses similar to how I do versus a right-handed player. Yeah. So it's truly special, and I'm honored to be part of his, you know, his life.
Yeah, no bigger compliment than Lefty seeing a little bit of him in you, only at the age of 19 as well. Akshay, congratulations once again. An amazing win, a huge achievement, and enjoy. I think we might be having you back on the show pretty soon, so have a great weekend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, well, stay with us here on Golf Today as we will be heading back down to the Orange County Convention Center for plenty more interviews throughout our show today from the final day of the 69th PGA Show. We'll be back after this.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
We'll be right back. Well, what makes a bad round of golf taste a little bit better? I tell you what, a pint of Guinness in an Irish pub. But Eamon Lynch, you've never had a pint of Guinness in your life. I cannot believe this.
This is actually true. I'm the least Irish person you'll ever meet, Anna. Although, God knows, my golf has given me reason to drink over the years, but I've never found my way to a pint of Guinness yet.
OK, well, someone who I feel like is a little bit more Irish than you then is Matt Adams. He is bringing a touch of Ireland to Orlando at the PGA Show. So take it away, Matt.
Perhaps there's no place that I feel more comfortable than in an authentic Irish pub. Richard Hill is here with me. Paul Kelly is drawing the drafts of the Guinness, of course, the black gold behind us. Richard, where are we? What's happening here?
This has been a crazy week, Matt. this idea came out of lockdown. All the bars were closed in Ireland for 18 months. We built our own bar. Some of the Irish golfers, we all got drunk, and they said, you've got to build these guys and bring it to the PGA Show in Orlando. And my goodness, the reaction we've got here is fantastic. These seem to be the perfect thing to put on a golf course for entertainment, or just put it in your backyard, your back garden.
Yeah, you were telling me that this, the bar itself is from a tree from what, 1756, was it?
Unbelievably, this is from a tree that came down in Storm Ophelia. It 1756 was planted on Glenarm Estate in County Antrim. Right, just down the road from Royal Port Rush, where the Open was, where she and Larry won in 2019. And when we lacquered it, it came up like a pint of Guinness cells. So I think this tree was made for this bar.
Paul, everything about this is, it looks so authentic to me, little slices of a legit Irish pub.
Well, there are, and like every Irish pub, there's always some little nooks and crannies behind the bar. So one of the special things that we're very proud of is for the special guests like yourself, we've even got a hidden stash with that very, very special bottle.
Red Dress 21.
And the true spirit of Irish hospitality, it'd be very remiss of me and rude of me not to let you taste some of this fine Irish whiskey from Red Breast. It's one of the best bottles in Ireland, and in true Irish tradition, we always have it for breakfast. So as we're here in the morning of the NBA show, you're very welcome to taste on it. But, you know, this great thing, this little micro pub holds 200 pints, so there's two fridges below me here. We can serve 200 pints. The Guinness is completely cold and tastes absolutely amazing. But the most important thing you need to know with this bar, there's no closing time, so be prepared for the hangovers because you spend an awful lot of time once you walk through the
door. I'm very much looking forward to it. Just give Richard another a pint of Guinness there so we can carry on our way. Pub Oak, no better place than we can be right here. And what is that? What are you pointing at, Richard?
Well, you can maybe smell. You've been to Ireland. Does it smell familiar?
Yeah, a little smell of the peat right
there.
We
have a little bit of peat burning here in this cottage just to make you feel at home.
Yeah, that little cottage right there, but this little pub right here very much makes us feel at home. I think I'm going to stay here for the rest of the day. Bailey, over to you.
I'm here with Niall Gibbon, CEO of Golf Ireland, and there's a lot to talk about, the beauty, the fun of Ireland and golfing there. You're here promoting Ireland. It's such a wonderful place. Why do people fall in love with Ireland when they go?
It's all about the people, it's all about the golf, it's all about the pubs and the fun. And I think it's great to be here in Orlando this week promoting Ireland. We have 24 of the top courses here. We're back. The crack, which is another word for the fun in Ireland, the crack is back. Ireland is open for business and we're looking forward to a great year.
Let's talk a little bit more about being back open for business because that's fantastic. It's obviously topical right now with everything going on in the world and the pandemic, but restrictions were recently lifted.
Yeah, the Irish government made an announcement last Friday that all pandemic restrictions are more or less lifted now. So no more social distancing. The pubs, restaurants, all open as usual. Golf courses were open anyway. But it means now that you can travel to Ireland as long as you're vaccinated. No further requirements. In you go. 13 gateways from the United States this year. Really good air capacity into Dublin and Shannon Airport. So easy to get there. Great golf courses here with us. Got big things coming down the track like the Ryder Cup in 2027.
I noticed you're sporting
occasion,
that.
In case you
yes.
didn't think I was from Ireland. Ryder Cup 27.
I put on my green today.
I'm very impressed. It's good preparation for St. Patrick's Day.
It absolutely is. And by the way, I want to ask as small of questions as possible and just let you talk because I love listening to your accent, obviously. Tell me a little bit more about the people. Why are they so friendly and welcoming and why do they want the rest of the world to come to Ireland to experience their golf?
There's a special relationship, I think, between the visitor and the visited. And in Ireland, we have a sense of curiosity about people. We want to know who you are, where you came from, what brought you here, what is it that you like? And I think people find that engaging. And that is why, in golf terms, you refer to that as the 19th hole. So you go out and play your game. It doesn't matter if it was good or if it was bad. The question is, how did the relationship go afterwards? And you end up solving the problems of the world in the Irish pub that night and forget about them all afterwards.
So when I plan my trip to Ireland, Guinness, that's what I got to go with, right?
It's a good start, yeah, but there's lots of other things too. The food is really good. Food scene has really improved in Ireland in the last while. Great sense of renaissance in Irish food. I think outdoor activity as well, particularly in a post-COVID world. A lot of the research we're doing in the tourism world is showing that people want to be more outdoors. So if you do like a bit of walking, a bit of cycling for softies, you know, outdoor adventure, a lot of that type of activity in Ireland now available, in addition to your golf holiday, of course.
Absolutely. If your first time going to Ireland, where are you flying into? What would you suggest?
Well, you have two choices. Dublin on the east coast, which is the capital, lots to see and do, and it's the gateway to access a lot of Ireland. But Shannon Airport on the west of Ireland as well is served by a lot of the airlines during the summer months, and that gives you great access to the Wild Atlantic Way, where a lot of the really good Lynx courses are. So you've got two really good options in terms of flying in. And if you need more information, Ireland.com, which is our website, will give you all the information on how to get around, how to book, where to go.
Perfect. I just love listening to him talk, don't you? I'm sure you do too. My name is Bailey, and I've not been to Ireland proper. Northern Ireland, yes, for the Open in 2019, but not yet Ireland. I have to change that. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Maybe, thanks so much indeed, and look forward to seeing you in Ireland sometime soon.
Yes. Back to you guys.
Thanks, Bailey. There really is nothing quite like golf over in Ireland. But sticking with the news across the pond, it's been confirmed by the Royal and Ancient Golf Club at St Andrews that the Duke of York, Prince Andrew, has relinquished his honorary membership to the club. Prince Andrew currently involved in an ongoing sexual abuse lawsuit, so the club has said they respect and appreciate his decision. Golf Today will be back after this.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Now, it was a breakthrough Wednesday on the Korn Ferry Tour as Brandon Harkins earned his first tour win at the Bahamas Great Abaco Classic. This week marked the 179th start for Harkins between all PGA Tour sanctioned events. So the Korn Ferry Tour tweeting, "This is the grind. 179 starts across four PGA Tour sanctioned tours before getting his first win." And let's say some of his friends had a special message after the win.
Congrats, this is good news. I hope when you go home you wear that cow costume you wore at Halloween and you get equally as overserved. But congratulations, you're the man, keep it up.
Brandon, I'm so happy for you and Rachel and the kids. Awesome stuff, you guys deserve this, and I can't wait to have a beer with you, man. I had my phone out there all day. One of his best friends was out here watching me today, updating me on every hole. Actually, when I heard that they were live on Twitter for the playoff, I pulled it out on a third hole and was watching, so through second hole. So I knew what was going on. And then on three green is when I found out. I saw my wife jumping around, so I'm so happy for him. He's worked hard the last, you know, couple years to get back out here, and you know, it's not a guarantee, but it's a step in the right direction for sure. Huge step.
Clearly a very popular guy out there on tour as we welcome in Brandon Harkins. It is so good to see you. Congratulations. We've seen the stats. We know how hard you've worked to get to this point. Brandon, tell us, you're a champion. Has it sunken in? What sort of emotions have you got right now?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It's I don't know if it's quite sunken in the whole way yet, but I had a long travel day yesterday. I got home about midnight, and finally, I'd been gone from my family for a couple of weeks, and you know, it feels great to be here with them, and you know, knowing that we've got that first win.
Brandon, a couple of months ago, you won the TaylorMade Invitational at Pebble Beach. At one point, you actually birdied the 11th through 18th holes at Pebble Beach to do that. You beat a lot of PGA Tour winners in that event. Did that give you more confidence heading into this year than you might have had?
I think certainly, you know, I kind of got hot that first round, and yeah, I did. I made eight in a row, which was my first nine holes. But yeah, to win there, it was a good field, a great field, and a lot of proven winners were there. And to win at Pebble, you know, which is a very special place to me, means a lot. And I I certainly took some confidence from it for sure.
Brandon, you said this win in the Bahamas is a win that you will never forget. Tell us what in particular sort of makes this trophy such a special one.
Well, I think, you know, just that it's kind of my first one. And, you know, there's always, I've been asked a few times if you doubted yourself or, you know, if you ever thought this would happen. And you know, there's always a little doubt in the back of your mind. You know, am I going to win? When am I going to win? And it's a lot of trust, you know, trusting our process, trusting everything we're doing, is paying off. You know, I think so. Just with that said, having it be my first win, you know, I'll hold it close to my heart forever.
Brandon, barring the improbable, you're now playing on the PGA Tour next year. You've already played a couple of seasons out there. You've had a handful of top tens. What will make you a different player? How do you think you'll be a different player in your third season on the tour versus the first two that you played?
Yeah, that's a good question. Certainly now I think I'm trying to be less of a perfectionist, if you will. You know, my first stretch up there on that tour, I achieved to be as perfect as I could and play as perfect as I could. And this game just isn't really about, you know, perfection. And I'm learning that, and I'm kind of seeing things in a little bit of a different way. And you know, with that said, my priorities are a little different now with my family and spending time with them. So I think I'm just a lot more kind of centered, if you will, and a much more rounded player, I guess.
Speaking of your family, Brandon, you've got a lot going on at home. You've got two little boys, one of which is almost just 2 months old. That's really hard to walk away from, and finding that life balance is really difficult, I can imagine. Was this week sort of a case of beware of the exhausted golfer? Not much sleep, I imagine, going on at home.
You're exactly right. Not a ton of sleep at home. You know, however, when I took off for these last few weeks, I actually caught up on sleep great. But... yeah, not a ton of sleep. This was the first time I've left with two kids. So, yeah, it was tough. I don't love to leave them, and I was homesick for sure. But just kind of made sure I took care of business, you know, handled whatever I could, and couldn't wait to get home.
Yeah, I hear you. Nothing brings on severe exhaustion like a newborn baby. So you did extremely well to claim your first win. Congratulations. You so deserve it. And clearly all the guys on tour are so happy for you. So enjoy it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
All righty. Well, next up, we are heading back out to those show aisles after the break as we soak up the last day of the PGA Show in Orlando. Stay with us. Coming up on Golf Today, we've got a fiery Eamon Lynch in the studio as he lets loose with some hot takes on some of golf's burning topics. Plus, it's not the first time we've ever seen Bryson DeChambeau collapse on the back nine at Torrey Pines. How did Bryson end up missing the cut yesterday at the Farmers Insurance Open? And it's the final day of the PGA Show as our friends Bailey Shambly and Matt Adams continue to bring us everything we need to know around the world of golf. This is Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And with that, we say a very good morning and welcome into our Golf Channel studios. Happy Friday as we say hello to you on Golf Today. Anna Whiteley, delighted to be alongside Eamon Lynch. And now, Eamon, it's coming into the weekend, but we need to batten down the hatches, my friend, because over the next 48 hours here in Connecticut, we're going to get how many feet of snow?
I think it's about a foot and a half, and I'm sitting here wondering why I actually left the PGA Show to fly back here yesterday, other than your company, of course, Anna.
Madness. The Florida sun in January is exactly where you need to be because things could get a little bit icy around here. So watch out if you're around here in Connecticut. Well, let's go to someone who's playing a little bit hotter than the weather here in Connecticut, shall we say. Adam Shank, he was on fire yesterday over at Torrey Pines. Here he is on the par four 11th, a lengthy birdie putt from the fringe.
And that was his eighth birdie in a row. He led by one at 11 under par.
Yeah, he is on the par four 13th, his second doing very well to keep up with the big guys. JT, John Rahm, they're currently all tied for the lead as they enter the third round on a Friday over at Torrey Pines. So he would make that, make par in. Oh, that, in fact, would end his 8-in-a-row birdie streak, but he still played very well. The par 4 16th there, his second.
This ends up just 10 feet right of the pin. Put in for birdie.
So Schenk here at 16, putting for birdie once again. He would make it and take the lead at 12 under. His ninth birdie of his day. So he is part of the three-way tie for the lead at 13 under heading into today's round, which gets underway his tee time at 2:40. But you can see his scorecard from yesterday, those eight consecutive birdies, 4 through 11 with that second round, 10 under 62. Really, really impressive stuff. Okay, well, one day removed from his 30th birthday, let's hear from some of his friends, because when your name is Schenk, you can't help but get a few comments.
It's funny, I was hitting some pull cuts in the range this morning, and I did Schenk one. It was my first one in a while. But I mean, I called Schenk the sand wedge. It was like my third shot of the day. But I usually hit it off the toe in tournaments. So that's fortunate. But yeah, lots of jokes. But everybody just calls me by my last name, so I guess that makes it easy. So I don't look at it as like someone's obviously not making fun of it. They do, you know, make fun or have fun with it. But a lot of my friends or a lot of my best friends just call me Schenk, so... I mean, it's actually pronounced Schenk, but everybody just says Schenk, so I kind of just go with it. It's a lot easier.
Almost as good as Damon Hack. I think he can probably relate to that just a little bit. Well, this is the interesting thing about the top of this leaderboard at the moment. If we check out how many fairways these leaders have been hitting over the last couple of days, John Rahm, just 14 fairways yesterday. Adam Schenk, 11. Cameron Tringali leading the way, tied for 16th in fairways hit by leaders at the moment. So you can see accuracy off the tee doesn't really seem to be paramount, which has been a bit of a source of frustration for players over the last couple of weeks, because you're not getting rewarded for accuracy off the tee. And these are the winning scores that we can see in the first three events of the calendar year. In just three tournaments into the new year, we've already seen a combined winning score of 80 under par across those events. And, well, John Rahm, he's had a thing or two to say about this.
My reaction? I mean, I think the video is pretty self-explanatory. I mean, we're the PGA Tour. We're the best golfers on the planet, and we're playing a golf course where missing the fairway means absolutely nothing. There was times where missing a fairway by an inch was worse than missing a fairway by 20 yards. That, to me, is a mistake. I don't know what else to say, right? I also understand we're in the desert. You can't oversee the entire golf course, and things like that can't happen. But, yeah, we played a lot of golf with zero rough. It's just, I don't know.
Would you like to have taken some of the language back?
I mean, yeah, if I knew somebody was recording, I wouldn't say the way I did, but I was just thinking out loud and letting some frustration out, because that's how I felt, right? I mean, no matter where you hit it, you're going to be able to hit it on the green, and it becomes a putting contest. Who can make the putts? That's about it. There's no premium for anything else, right? I mean, the perfect example was hole 14. It's a hole that usually hit in the fairway is very, very important, because if you miss it and you're in the rough, it's a tough green to hit and make a birdie on. And this time we were hitting driver to 20 yards off the green because there was no rough, right? That's the best example I can think of. And there's a couple others. I mean, I can tell you right now, with the way I struck the ball last week and the way I putted, if it was in, let's say, major championship conditions, I probably wouldn't have made the cut, let alone finish 14th. Or I shouldn't have, I believe. Maybe, maybe not. But I just think it was a bit too easy for the best players in the world. That's just my opinion.
I mean, I imagine there's only maybe a small handful of players who are complaining about the fact that golf is too easy. Because, you know, for a lot of the field, they're thinking, well, hey, I can go up against the best 10 golfers in the world, and I can actually compete because I'm not getting penalised perhaps as much as I should be for being not such a good golfer. Is John Rahm in the right here? Is he right to be frustrated? Would you be frustrated? Are our players just precious nowadays?
I'm frustrated every round I play, good or bad, Anna. Almost every great player, and certainly any good player I've ever played with, they all want the course set up to suit their strengths. And John Rahm is one of the best drivers of the golf ball in the world. So, of course, he's no different in that. And I was glad to see he didn't actually back down on this and kind of double down, if anything else. Because if someone's caught using profanity on video, as John Rahm was, there's this tendency that they need to go to behavioural rehab. They ought to apologise for it. And he's right here. There is a consistency to the PGA Tour setup week in and week out that really only has two variables now, which is some elements of the course design or the weather. And if neither one of those are particularly troublesome, then you're going to get low scores. And you play in a bubble out at the Amex anyway. You know, 24 under par is the average winning score at that tournament in the last 10 years. Torrey Pines, by comparison, which is a slightly trickier course and slightly trickier weather, has an average winning score of 12.5 under par in those 10 years. But players, there's a reason why you have this consistency all the time, is because players start to whine whenever you change it. It turns into a real crybaby convention out there. Go back, this has been a long time. You go back to the Memorial Tournament. In 2006, Jack Nicklaus announced that bunkers had no longer become a penalty for players. So he introduced these kind of more rutted bunkers. And he got out the old rakes that looked as though they were from the old Tom Morris era, with kind of deeper teeth, wider teeth. So these guys didn't have a perfect lie anymore. And the reaction to it was swift and hostile from the players. Carl Pedersen won that week, and he actually said, which backed up Jack's argument, that it changed his strategy for the week because he decided that he could not risk being in those fairway bunkers. Paul Azinger, on the other hand, said that the reaction to it was universally hostile because it took away the advantage of the best bunker players in the world. Well, they're all great when they've got an even lie here. And to me, it just speaks to this kind of crybaby mentality on tour, that they don't want hard setups and the tour caters to it. If we go back even to the US Open at Erin Hills in 2017, where the rough was waist high, miles off what were pretty wide fairways, and Kevin Na started crying on Monday, and the USGA got the lawnmowers out before anyone teed off on Thursday. John Rahm's on the PAC, the Players Advisory Committee. If he wants to actually have some input on course setup and ask for something more difficult, he's in a position, as we said earlier, to raise his voice. He's got authority to do that out there. And I think it was a good sign of what he did, because one thing is true here on tour. Shooting 25 under par every week is not actually a warm-up for major championships, because they demand a lot more, including patience and resilience, than you're asked for week in, week out.
Yeah, it feels like the perfect setup is very hard to come by. Either they're too easy, or you say you get to Monday of a US Open and Twitter is just littered with players taking video of the rough and just saying how hard the challenge is going to be, and the USGA have got it wrong once again, and it's just, you know, it's too hard, it's too easy. I mean, how hard is it for these guys, for these tournament hosts, to set up a course that makes the players happy?
It's almost impossible to make the players happy, because generally speaking, only one guy out of the 156 leaves happy every week. And part of the reason why the Memorial experiment with those bunkers and rakes only lasted a couple of years is no other tournament weighed in behind Jack Nicklaus on that point. And Jack was entirely in the right on that, but nobody else did it because no one else wanted the heat from players saying it was too difficult. And these are the best players in the world. So if they don't have weather conditions and they don't have particularly tricky course architecture, well, then they're just going to shoot lights out all the time. We saw that in Kapalua, where you had three of the lowest scores in the history of the PGA Tour and two of them didn't win. And we're going to see low scores anytime the weather or the course architecture doesn't complicate things for these guys. But there are ways to make the golf courses a little trickier, more demanding and more penal for guys who are offline.
Yeah, I mean, JT said it last week. If there's no wind and the greens are soft, then they're literally going to shoot nothing. And pretty much so far this year, that's exactly what they've done. Scores are a little bit tougher out there at the Farmers Insurance Open. And that's kind of what you would expect from a beast like Torrey. They've got two rounds coming up over the South Course today and Saturday. So plenty of golf coming our way. Well, the last time we saw Bryson DeChambeau at Torrey Pines, he had a serious meltdown over the final nine holes that he chalked up more than bad luck. Let's face it, his luck wasn't much better this week, and we will take a short look when we get back. And well, last March, Bryson DeChambeau picked up his eighth career PGA Tour win at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Who can forget this moment
On the Florida Swing, the win, an important one to Bryson, who was quoted saying, "It's amazing to win Mr. Palmer's tournament. It's going to make me cry. He's had an influence on me for the longest time and will continue to do so for the rest of my life." That was probably one of the coolest moments of the year. Well, things didn't taste quite so sweet for Bryson yesterday at Torrey Aiman. Here he is on the par 3, 8, shot from the bunker. I mean, that's a shank over the green.
We saw that from Bryson on the back nine of Torrey Pines in the US Open last year, a shank as well.
Yeah, it was not pretty. Well, that's Bryson here on the 10th. He doesn't look like he's in great shape. He's looking a little bit hurt there with the driver in hand.
Yeah, I would look hurt if I hit it over there too.
I think that might be a slightly different scenario comparing you and Bryson, but he's sort of pouting after his tee and he's holding his wrist and he's not looking comfortable at all, with a bit of a grimace. So he continues on that back nine, moving on to the par 4 13th, his second shot from 292 yards. Again, not looking overly comfortable out there.
No, he looks as though he's in pain. He lost this one off to the right.
Yeah, not good. So Bryson sort of limping up the 13th fairway. Not in a good way. And we sort of caught him mentioning exactly what the problem could be. Well, he sort of did mention his wrist there, but that's some more issues that he found for himself. It was just a really bad day for him out there, Eamon.
Yeah, when you're hitting from lies like that, it's very easy to aggravate an issue, which he clearly looks as though he has done.
Yeah, OK, well, he was out there playing alongside Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, who sort of had quite promising opening rounds, but actually all three of them, three of the biggest names in the field, ended up missing the cut out there at Torrey. It was four over for Jordan Spieth and two under for Bryson and Ricky. So all round a little bit disappointing. I think we heard sort of rumours of Jordan Spieth having to go to hospital on the Wednesday night with non-COVID-related stomach issues, so he probably wasn't really feeling up to par, and then coming back and joining those two for a pretty horrible round on Thursday. But, you know, this isn't the first time that we've seen Bryson DeChambeau implode on the back nine at Torrey.
No, this group really was evidence that misery loves company yesterday, yeah. Anne. I mean, everyone seemed to be having a bad day in a different way, particularly with Bryson. And it's very easy to say this is a harbinger of what will come with Bryson. It may not be. All golfers get injured and the wrist is particularly susceptible. But when you swing as violently as Bryson does at the ball as often as he does, not just in the rounds that he plays where he goes out there and swings at the ball 40 times in full swings in a round of golf, he then goes to the range and closes down the range. You know, we've seen him so often play under floodlights because the guy is hitting so many balls. And at a certain point, you can't swing that violently that often and not feel some consequences from it. So maybe it's time, if there is an injury, maybe it's a kind of a blessing of sorts that he can actually kind of choke back from that kind of intensity for a while, because he's almost a year removed from his last win on the PGA Tour. He's had a lot of distractions. I mean, the long drive stuff as well, that doesn't necessarily help in terms of protecting the body. He's obviously in great shape, very strong, but it doesn't take much for it to go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, when you're pushing your body to the limits like Bryson DeChambeau does, and every single part of his body is under so much stress and strain, if you say the repetition of his practice swings and going out there with Chris Como and just hitting the nets and just hitting ball after ball, like you say, it feels like injuries are always going to be a part of his present and probably a part of his future. But it's sort of interesting seeing him come back to Torrey Pines, because what happened at the 2021 US Open was pretty disastrous. He led through 10 holes and then dropped 8 shots over that final 8 holes, and he absolutely threw the tournament away. Do you think there's any part of him that is thinking about that, returning to the crime scene, basically?
Well, it's not a course he has positive memories of. Mm. That's for sure. The 44 strokes over the last 9 holes, and then he said it was nothing but bad luck after that, and doubled down on that the following week and insisted that it was only bad luck and not bad play or nerves or anything else. But this is not a place that a lot of guys come to with fond memories, because it tends to beat them up, and most years Tiger won. So a lot of guys don't really come with a lot of positive sensibilities here. Jordan Spieth, another guy, I mean, he doesn't have a long record at Torrey Pines, but when you look at what Jordan has done since he finished second to Colin Morikawa at Royal St. George's, he's made 7 starts since then. He's had no top tens. He's only had 2 top 20 finishes. And, you know, he's had a kid since then as well. So it kind of, as you can attest, Anna, it kind of complicates life. There's not a lot of sleep there. There's a lot of noise in the house that didn't used to be there.
Yeah. But all sense of normality right out the window.
All of these guys have they're going home Friday night for different reasons. Ricky's been struggling with a swing. He's now 3 years removed since he won the Waste Management Phoenix Open. We saw a great potential from him at the start of the season at the CJ Cup. He finished tied for third back in October behind Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa. And that looked like one of those moments where he was kind of turning the tide with his work with John Tillery over the last couple of years. But there hasn't been much promising since then. And now he started the year with a couple of missed cuts. So there are three guys who are not in good places, but it's not necessarily a harbinger of what's coming in the weeks ahead for them. I'd be more worried in this case about Ricky long-term and Bryson in the short-term with the injury. Spieth, I think, has just had a bad week.
Yeah. Three names that always create such intriguing storylines and we always love to talk about, and we look forward to seeing them back out on tour very soon indeed. Well, when Golf Today returns, we look ahead to a very special event coming up this weekend as the Advocates PGA Tour gets set to take on Torrey in the third playing of the APGA Farmers Insurance Invitational. We have got a great event coming up this weekend on the APGA Tour with the Farmers Insurance Invitational. For the first time in the event's three-year history, the event will be 36 holes contested on the north and south courses at Torrey Pines. So let's take a look at some of the details of the Farmers Insurance Invitational. It's the first event of the 2022 APGA Tour season. As we mentioned, over Torrey Pines, 36-hole first round on Saturday on the north course, and the final round will be on Sunday on the south course, which for the first time in APGA Tour history, it will be televised as we have got live coverage at 5 p.m. Eastern on Golf Channel. So one of the men in the field, Revivante Young, a notable name this week. 4 years after the end of his collegiate career at Alabama A&M, Young picked up his first APGA Tour win back in March of 2021. So with that, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome in Revivante. It's so good to see you. This week is huge for the APGA Tour and a special one for you as well. I know you're from the area. You've had some amazing experiences at Torrey Pines. Tell us about the history that you've had with this course.
I originally came out here with my grandfather, originally from Rancho Cucamonga, California. We used to come out here and play all the time. Used to come out here and watch Tiger. And so being out here and being able to play the event it's just a great opportunity to be able to play it in PGA Tour conditions. It's just an awesome experience, and I'm just happy to really be here.
Revivante, the APGA is all about bringing diversity to the game of golf. How important is it for the tour to have access to these kinds of courses, not just in preparing players for the big leagues, but to also encourage fans to actually engage with this tour?
Right. So with the APGA and what they're bringing to the table, I feel as if diversity is a big thing in the world of golf. There's not too many people coming from different backgrounds. And so what the APGA is doing, it's just providing the opportunity for us to be out here, be able to showcase what we can do, and being able just to have the opportunity to show people that we can play. And with the APGA, it's just been a great opportunity, bringing diversity to golf. It's just an awesome experience.
Revivante, we just saw it there a moment ago. You had that breakthrough victory back in March of last year. And just before that, you sought out a mental coach to kind of help you get to where you wanted to be inside the winner's circle. What did you gain from that experience?
I gained a lot. I would say that, I like many people out here, they put so much pressure on themselves to be able to play this game to a high caliber, like we all know that we can do. But there are times where it was just being too hard on myself, and I had to kind of sit back, look at the bigger picture. At the end of the day, it's just a game. I'm a son, I'm a brother, I'm a cousin, I'm a friend to many people around me, and that at the end of the day, they'll always love me no matter if I shoot 90 or 67.
That's kind of the same message we've heard from Rory McIlroy over the last few years as well. Revivante, you came off that win last year in March on the Advocates Tour. Now you're spending a lot of time this week around the best players in the world on the PGA Tour, which is your ultimate goal. How close are you to getting there, or do you take something from this week that teaches you what you need to improve for that next step in the development of your career?
Right. I, being out here, I've been able to watch many people on the PGA Tour just to see what they can do. I've talked to a few players trying to pick their brain. There are many who come out young, and there are many who are on the same road that I am. And to be able to see that and to be able to speak to them and what they had to do to accomplish their goals, I think there's nothing better than just to be able to pick their brain and figure out what I need to do.
Yeah, you are certainly in the right place. And we're seeing APGA players receive invites onto the PGA Tour more now than we ever have done. How important do you think those starts are in order to bring more diversity to the game?
They're huge. They're huge. For us, looking at the bigger picture, with us playing in this APGA Tour event this week, it's just opening up doors for the future, being able for kids to see people who look like them playing on the PGA Tour. There's not too many. And so for them to see us out here, I think it's just going to give them hope and make them try to chase their dreams a little bit harder.
Yeah, Ravante, well, enjoy every moment of this week. We are so looking forward to watching you guys out there on Sunday. So have a good one and play well.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, good stuff. Alrighty, well, that is Sunday. The APGA Farmers Insurance Invitational will air right here on Golf Channel, marking the first time an APGA event will be televised at 5 p.m. right here on Golf. And our very own Damon Hack will be on the call, so do not miss it. Well, check this out. On Wednesday, during the first round of the Farmers Insurance Open, four-time major champ Brooks Koepka shocked the golf world, debuting his all-blonde hairdo. I mean, this is something quite special. Well, skip forward to yesterday, and it seemed as though the starter got a little bit confused as to who was actually teeing it up.
Next on the tee, please welcome Bruce Koepka.
Brooksie. That big slinger cut. There's the blonde.
Did Tony say Bruce? I could have sworn he said Bruce Koepka.
It's such a new look that the starter didn't even recognize him. Bruce Koepka was teeing it up. Well, unfortunately for Bruce, he did actually miss the cut, along with some big names who also won't be making it through to the weekend. We can see Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Sam Burns, and last week's winner Hudson Swafford all looking a little bit disappointed, shall we say. Well, Max Homer, you can always count on him to make a sad situation a little bit more lighthearted. He said, I've never missed a cut on a Thursday before. So that's something, I guess. Hashtag golf. Joel Damon also responded to that one, saying, I have many times shot such a big number on Thursday that I have no chance on Friday. Hashtag blessed. Hashtag golf. First of all, thoughts on Bruce's peroxide blonde hair?
I'm interested to see if Jenna Sims, his fiancé, will allow him to keep it by the time the wedding rolls around this summer. I don't think he cares what they call him, as long as the trophy engraver gets the name right, because he's got a kind of a single-minded focus on that. And he's trying to kind of find his game. Again, he's kind of struggled for most of last year, a lot of physical injuries, but he's defending at the Waste Management Phoenix Open in a couple of weeks, and I think he's probably going to look to there to make a statement. He probably expected more from himself this week, because, you know, he put himself in contention on Sunday at the US Open at Torrey Pines last summer, so he's probably not in the best of moods right now, having left.
No, but I think he probably likes his reflection, because I think that's quite a cool little cut that he's got himself there. So, OK, Brooks, slightly disappointing. Anyone else on that missed cut list who surprised you?
Not really surprised. I mean, there were a couple of guys I was hoping for more from. Jonathan Bird missed the cut. He Monday qualified in. Five-time tour winner whose game has kind of left him over the year. Started working with Justin Parsons down at Sea Island recently. He was actually next on the tee after me for a lesson with Justin recently. He's got better results. He Monday qualified into Torrey but missed the cut, not by much. Phil Mickelson, way down there as well, missing the cut. He missed the cut last week at the Amex when he was the host by 14 strokes. He missed the cut by 6 strokes this week. So you've got to start thinking maybe Phil Mickelson's waiting for those Champions Tour starts to roll around again.
But he is our reigning PGA champion, so basically it doesn't really matter what Phil Mickelson does.
He only needs one good week per year, right?
Because he is a reigning major champion, which I still can't believe we're sort of saying. It still doesn't fit quite right. But, you know, what an incredible year he had last year. Okay, well, that is what's happening over on the PGA Tour. But the LPGA is coming up in just over half an hour live here on Golf Channel. We have got second round coverage of the Gainbridge LPGA. Just over 30 minutes. You can see what's happening out there at the moment. Lydia Ko is leading the way by 3 strokes at the moment. She's through 10 holes. Danielle Kang will be teeing up this afternoon. She's coming off her win last week on tour as well. So Golf Today will be back right after this.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet. Live your bet life.
Well, it has been a pretty incredible week at the 69th PGA Show in Orlando, Florida. We have seen all sorts of golf gear, training aids and accessories that will no doubt improve your golf life. And a huge thanks to our team on the ground, led by Bailey Chamblee and Matt Adams. Guys, for the final time, just take us through your final thoughts on the week that was.
Anna, thank you so much. It's not just us down here in Orlando. We've had a whole team behind the scenes, too, that have done an absolutely great job. What are your parting thoughts? As sad as it is to get to a point where we're saying, hey, it's over, well, what are you thinking?
Yeah, we're introduced to so many wonderful products and wonderful stories. I have an update on a story. I featured a 10-year-old earlier this week, Carter Bonus. He is on the autism spectrum. He launched a company during COVID called Spectrum Golf. He was afraid he wasn't going to get hired one day. He didn't want to wait till one day to try to get hired. He wanted to create his own business to be his own boss today. So he recently started playing golf, and then he has launched Spectrum Golf, which is for men, women, and children's clothing. They have inspirational messages inside the line. Inside the pants. So the update to the story is 5% of his proceeds that he receives, he wants to donate to charity. So he is actually, for 2021, he is very donating good. 5% to L's for Autism Foundation, and that total is $347.20. So he's doing wonderful things in the world of golf and in the world in general.
That is awesome.
Really special.
We've met so many special people and great people here this week. The thing that I am hearing this week that is so great is that there are obviously less people here than there has been in years past because of the global pandemic, less people displaying their wares than there has been in the past. Yet those that are here are really happy and excited about the people that have been here because, frankly, they're buyers. They're people that are coming here with specific intent. They're not kicking tires. They're not just peering through the windows. So they're here with intent to actually make purchases. So the business side of what goes on behind us in the trade side has been very strong. Strong indeed.
Absolutely loved watching everything that you guys have done, from the fashion to the merchandise to the equipment to the training aids. If you had to pick one thing, Matt, what would you take home?
One thing that you would take home, Matt?
For me, the one thing I would take home is that I didn't hear him.
Did they talk down?
Yeah, I didn't hear a thing. I was standing here.
Well, it's good that the technology went out at the very, very end, not earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Well, so yes, your favorite
item.
Yeah, my
one thing that I would take away from here is that obviously this is about business because it's an $84 billion a year industry. But my takeaway from the whole thing is always the same every year. There are people here that have hopes and dreams, and they have these little widgets and things that they want to become the most important thing in the world of golf. And I hope for them that it does. But the commerce that's traded here more than anything else is a commerce of the heart. It is one of hope. And when we're in January and coming into a season, even at a time when the game of golf is booming such as it is, I think to know that it's based on an underpinning of hope is fantastic. I'm going to send it to you because I won't be able to hear them to toss it back to them. So what about you?
So your takeaway was more ethereal. Mine is actually physical. So my takeaway, and I probably will just run off with this vibe. I showed it in a previous segment, but it is the speaker comes off at the bottom. It's a tumbler. Oh, I keep turning away from the camera. See? Oh, technology. Thank goodness we're getting off the air soon. This is all going south. Okay, it's a separate speaker. It
wow.
won PGA Show 2022 Best New Product. So tumbler, speaker, $39. Get you one and get us off the air.
I love it.
It's been a long week.
Back
long week.
Guys.
Great week.
It's been a long week, and you guys have done an amazing job. And Bailey, I'm so with you. As soon as you brought that out on the camera earlier, I was like, that is a great product. But we have also been treated to a little slice of the PGA Show ourselves, because the lovely guys at Out of Bounds Candles have sent us both a candle, Eamon Lynch, and the kind of the theme is that they're sort of creating the sense of famous smells or things that you might want to have a little whiff of. So I've got here from Congressional the Gold Course, which is golden honeysuckle, which does smell very fresh.
Well, I've got Transfusion, which is made of grape and lime vodka, which I'm actually sure I may have had this in liquid form
earlier in the week in Orlando. But that's what the Golf Channel smells like.
You think if I asked them nicely, they would pour me a candle called Eau de Chambly with a nice little scent
really,
of smugness
really
about
want
it.
To really? Smell that? No, I feel like I.
But then
want...
I could snuff him out. Finally,
true. I feel like I'd want maybe like the smell of the fresh cut grass at the old course, or sort of the coastal sand.
Not the caddies at the old course. No.
Not the caddies, or maybe like the wild safari animals at Leopard Creek in South Africa. Maybe that wouldn't smell too good actually. But I really like the concept. It's fun.
Yeah, it brings a little golf home with you, and since we're about to have a foot of snow up here, anything that keeps us warm. This is the only way we can light it up now, Anne.
I know, and that we will. Well, it's been just as sweet working with you as these candles smell. Enjoy the Gainbridge LPGA. It's coming up right now. We will see you tomorrow.